We've invited T.J. Waters, who has gone inside the CIA, inside their spy school, to come here and explain what goes on. Now, is this a result of your own experience, T.J. Waters?
Yes, it is. Good morning, Doug.
Hi. What did you do and why did you do it?
Well, the book of Class 11 is not really about the CIA or the training program. It is a story of America's response to 9/11, yeah. As you characterized earlier. You know, we all saw the documentaries and the various TV specials of what happened leading up to that day. And really, Class 11 picks up from that point on and tells you what happened next. And you're absolutely right. Americans have been responding by joining the agency in record numbers. 170,000 applied
wow.
in the weeks and the months after the 9/11.
How many
attack.
Jobs are there annualized? How many people work at the CIA, or is that a secret?
It's secret. It is measured in the thousands, but the exact number is classified.
Mm-hmm.
But there are so many different jobs available, and that's been really interesting, particularly with my class. We were a little bit older than what the agency would typically try and go after as far as recruiting. They generally go for people coming right out of college or just punching out of the military.
Yeah.
And we were largely mid-career professionals in our mid-30s.
What were you doing?
I was a consultant, actually, in Tampa, Florida. We also had a commercial airline pilot in the class, a hostage negotiator, a couple of investment bankers from New York, as you can imagine, a few corporate lawyers. But we also had a sous chef or two, a technical writer, an NFL alumni. A little bit of everything, because that was really who wanted to respond after the 9/11 attacks. It was a cross-section of the country, a little over 100 people that really had nothing in common other than a desire to answer the call from a wounded nation.
So what can you tell us about the training and then not have to kill me afterwards?
Well, you do see a fair amount of the training in the book, and the reason for that is just to put a context to what all these different people were doing. The first chapter opens obviously with just my perspective, because at the time that's all I had it.
Sure.
With the second chapter, you get more and more students, and then with the third chapter is when two big things happened, and that was in October of 2002. First off, you had the DC sniper attacks, and we were out in the street doing a lot of surveillance training. So from a class perspective, you know, the national perspective, that's what was going on. And then as an individual, my wife miscarried while she was still in Florida and I was living in D.C. And how the agency handled that, I think, is radically different from what they would have done 5 years earlier, where they would have might just have said, well, you know, that's too bad for you guys, we're sorry, but, you know, get back to work. Instead, they came, got me out of class, put me on a plane and said, I don't want to see your ugly face for 3 days.
Yeah.
Go down to Florida and take care of your wife.
Now, the other side of it is that you had to get the permission of the CIA in order to sell the book, or write, was it writing? You wrote the book, but then you had to, in order to get it published, you needed Porter Goss or whoever was in charge at the time's sign off?
Well, that's correct. Anytime an agency officer or former agency officer writes anything on intelligence, it has to be chopped. I actually sat down with the Publications Review Board chairman before I wrote a word and just said, hey, thinking about writing a book about this unique group of people, what do you think? And he just kind of looked at me and said, wow, I think that'd be a hell of a book. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, you know, can we do this? And he said, well, you write it, and I will help you get it through the process. And he did a very nice job. That was back in 2004 when George Tenet was still in charge.
Right.
And when the permission came through, they had like 66 pages of redactions of material they wanted taken out, and I either had to change it to their standards or tweak it a little bit or just plain delete it. And we did that. And by the time the publisher was ready a year later to actually put the book out, well, you can see the number of changes that went through the agency at that time. There was a new director of Central Intelligence. There was a new publications chairman. And when the
and since then, there's another new one.
And now there's another one, exactly.
Yeah.
So it has been a really difficult 18 months for the CIA. Mm-hmm. And I think General Hayden is going to bring some calm back to it. We're starting to see a little bit of that now. He's bringing back a lot of the old guard that carried a lot of weight internally.
A lot of the, I mean, you can just say what you want to, it's over the water over the dam now, but most people who had any brains when they saw this Porter Goss nomination knew it was all political. He didn't have a clue, even though he was the chairman of that committee in the Congress. You know, it just really was annoying, but that's not what you write about. You write about the individuals who are in there and what they go through and how they do their job. So in the minute that we have left, let's talk about the criticism that's been leveled at the CIA and the FBI, these clandestine organizations,
mm-hmm.
because they don't seem to be accountable, and therefore they seem to bungle stuff, and there was a lot of blame that was focused on the CIA after September 11th.
Well, yeah, there was. And you have to remember, back in the 90s, a lot of people were leaving the agency, both in the clandestine service and elsewhere. And I remember Mr. Tenet saying at one of the hearings that it would take 5 to 10 years to rebuild the agency, and I think that was probably pretty accurate. It's been 5 years now, and I just saw a piece in the Washington Post about a week ago saying that 40% of the current CIA staff has been there less than 5 years, since 9/11.
So how do you manage to make it work under the circumstances?
Well, one thing about it is it's not a job you do for the glory, because there isn't any.
Yeah.
All the successes have to remain secret.
Yeah, you can't tell people that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So everybody that's there is answering a call because they feel that calling to be there. You're not doing it for the money, because there's not a lot of that either. You're not doing it for the glory. You're there to serve. And
yeah.
One thing that has been interesting for me, just in a couple of days that the book has been out, a lot of people have come up to me and said, "Wow, you know, I really like your book. I could never do that because I am just a blank."
Yeah.
They don't think they could be an ops officer.
Yeah,
they don't see themselves as an analyst. They don't see themselves as a briefer to the president. But they, you know, have that desire to serve.
Mm-hmm.
I am just an electrician. I am just a window washer. I'm just a groundskeeper. I'm just a sign language interpreter. All of those jobs exist at CIA. And
there's a place.
There's
a place for it. All
exactly.
Right, listen, let me send people. We have a book section at DougStephan.com in which your book, Inside the CIA Spy School, that's what it's called, right?
It's inside the post-9/11 spy class.
Okay. So that's there. Check it out at DougStephan.com in the book section. T.J. Waters with his story about what's going on currently, his experience as well at the CIA.